This is in Farmington, New Mexico. And this is, what's the name of our church?
Fellowship of Spirit.
Fellowship of Spirit. And what's our topic today? The topic is, how do you deal with unbelievers, especially when they're members of your family? How do you deal with unbelievers, especially when they're members of your family? Now, this is a good question. Now, you don't know the answer that I want you to give me, but maybe we'll take a guess, you know. Now, who are you?
I'm number one.
And who are you?
I am number one.
I'm sorry, I didn't whisper in your ear first. And who are you? And who are you?
Number one.
And who are you?
Well, I guess.
Huh? I'm number one.
I'm number one.
I'm number one. And you?
I'm number one.
I'm number one.
I am number one. Okay. Why am I concerned about what my family thinks of me? Now, we were just talking about our old buddy Jesus. You've heard of Jesus?
Yes.
Yeah. We talk about Jesus. Now, Jesus went through hell. Not really. Did Jesus know he was number one?
Yes.
Yes. Did Jesus know he was number one? He sure did. Now, when Jesus' mother and brothers and sisters came to the synagogue where he was giving a lecture, and they said, go tell Jesus that his mother and brother and sisters are waiting out here, and we want to speak to him. And what did Jesus say to the people in the synagogue? He said, you who hear my word and follow my word, you are my mother and my brethren. Now, at no time did Jesus' family support him. At no time did Jesus' family say, hey, you've got it going there. You must be really good. You know, that's my brother. He can't be a God. He can't be so superior, you know. That's my brother, you know. And his sisters, they go around with their boyfriends. Oh, you go, that freaky guy Jesus, that's your brother? And really, that's how they talked in those days, just like we do today. And the girl says, don't make me admit it, you know. We don't talk about him. He makes a big noise downtown. He makes a big noise wherever he goes, but we don't talk about him. They didn't believe in him. And Jesus himself said, a prophet is without honor in his own town, in his own community, in his own family. So now, where is the hang-up of having our relatives and our friends understand what we are learning, what we are practicing? You see, all of you are having the same hang-up that this little girl is having here. Same hang-up. And the hang-up is, you don't know how good you are. You don't know how wonderful you are. And the minute you start realizing how wonderful you are, you won't try to perform for somebody else. Now, you're listening to these type of talks, each given with a different crescendo, a different direction perhaps, but all with the same point of view that you're number one. Okay, now, this is what Jesus taught. He said, it's done unto you according to your belief. Not somebody else's belief, but your belief. Okay, now, so then you have a background of another religion, and you're coming into this organization. What does your mother and father and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and wife or children think of you, depending upon what kind of a family you have? I don't know, and that's okay. But what do they think? Oh, Dad's gone bazook. He's gone off into some strange organization. My goodness sake, he is just not with it. Welcome! And are you number one, too? I am number one. I am number one. I am number one. I am number one.
Okay, I am number one.
Believe it.
Got it.
Okay. I mean, when you come into this church, you're number one. Maybe in the outer world, they don't recognize that about you. But that's okay. You don't care. You don't care what the world thinks of you. You only care what you think of you. It's done unto you according to your thought. Now, who are you?
I'm number one.
Is that pretty good?
It's perfect.
Yes. Now, what's Susan over here doing? She is thinking that she isn't quite there spiritually. She isn't quite there in the illumination she'd like to have. She isn't quite there in the ability to speak her word and bring forth the experiences that she wants in her life. She isn't quite there. Now, I whispered in her ear, and I said, "You're already there. You're already there. Admit it. Stop chasing it and start realizing that you're creating everything wonderful in your world, especially your kids. They're the most fantastic kids on the face of the earth, and you know it. Right?"
"Yes, sir."
"Oh, my God, yes." "Right?"
"Right."
"Right, right, right. And what about them?" And I'm not talking about the kids. What about everybody in our world? Is everybody in our world fantastic? Now, if I walk into a group of people and they're all arguing and really bitch, 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 you know, and I walk in there and I got a big smile on my face, blah, 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 "Hi, everybody." They look at me. "Don't you realize we're having an argument here?" "No, I thought you were just having an enthusiastic encounter with each other. I just thought you were having a good time here. You know, you're really having a lot of fun." "You are silly. You know, you are an idiot." No. I am unconditional love. Wherever I go, I see what I am. And you guys are unconditionally loving. And she's so fantastic, you know. Hey, you know, you're a very wonderful man. No wonder your wife feels that when she's with you, she's in paradise. You know, no wonder. And you feel the same way. Now, you, you know you're in paradise because, I mean, you know, what else could happen to you, you know? She's got the key. and you have your own key, too. But you see, you're the creators of your world. You're the creator. Now, did you realize if Jesus would have preached to his family and talked to his family, they would have said, "Well, what makes you think you're so all-fired great, you know? Do some miracles for us, you know, make some wine out of water, or do some other." And Jesus told his mother, "No, no, no, I don't do that. Jesus, make some wine for the wedding feast." "All right, Mom," you know, really. Read the Bible, it's right there. Very clear, very, very evident, but not perhaps said in the frivolous way that I say it. But it is there, and this is what it is. And you see, what's your problem? Your problem is that you're hung up on money. Forget the damn filthy lucre. Forget the money. You know, forget the money. Do you know what this guy's doing? He has a dream. And he doesn't even have a place to make the dream happen. But he has a dream. And he has an idea where it could be. And is it going to happen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, it is. Now, is he panicky about, "Why doesn't it happen? Why doesn't it happen? I waited 10 minutes and it hasn't happened yet." You know? Why doesn't it happen? You see, you don't do that. You just keep dreaming. And you remain true to your dream. Always remain true to your dream. And when you're true to your dream, your children are going to look at you and say, "My God, I should have hung in there with Dad. I mean, he had a good operation going. I could have made a good place for myself, and I could be the president of the corporation and run the whole show, but Dad doesn't want to do that. He wants to go and plant cherry trees, you know." and you know, not like George Washington, chop them down, but just to plant them. And so, you see, this is what goes on. Our own family, our friends, our relatives, the people in our world can never conceive who you are, because "I remember when you wet your pants. I remember when you had your diapers changed. I remember. Oh, my sisters pull that on me. Yeah. Every time I see my sisters, they're twins, and they're 4 years older than me, they say, "Yeah, we used to push Herbie around in the baby buggy, you know, and we used to push Herbie around in the baby buggy when he broke his leg. You know, he got bumped by a car and broke his leg, and we had to shove him all around. We had to take care of him, and we had to do this, and we had to do that." You know, and, you know, hey, cool. But You know, they all respect who I am. They know that I'm living what I believe. They know I'm teaching what I believe. They know no matter how horrendous my experiences may be that I have to go through, and sometimes we go through them. Why? Why do you go through hell? To show that you're an angel and untouched by it. That's not where you belong in hell. So you walk through it. And 10,000 fall on one side and 1,000 on the other, and nothing comes nigh unto you. Do you understand that? This is the truth. This is the principle. This is what we're teaching. This is what we're living. In the Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East by Baird Spaulding, it's a very fascinating series of books. If you haven't read it, you might like to. But in there, Baird Spaulding was with one of the masters, and they had to make a trip. Now, the master just could go click, click, and he's there, you know. But he had Baird on his tail, so he had to walk with him. And a big fire came out in the field. And so he said, Baird, do you want to walk through the fire? Or shall we put a little air-conditioned tunnel there for you? And Baird says, well, the air-conditioned tunnel. And so they had an air-conditioned tunnel. Now, was the air-conditioned tunnel really there? No. But as far as Baird was concerned, it was there. Because he created that consciousness in his mind. They walked right through that heat, right through that fire, untouched. They didn't feel the fire. They didn't know the fire. They didn't see the fire. The fire didn't affect them in any way. They were untouched. Now you say, ho, 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 ho. Yeah, silly, silly talk. Not really. You say, I am walking on cool, wet moss as you walk across these briquettes that are glowing red, and you are untouched. The minute you say, I'm walking on fire, you're fried. You see? But you give it the name you want. There is no hell. There is only heaven. There is no misunderstanding of our relatives of who we are. We cannot see that. Our eyes are so pure and so perfect and so wonderful on what we believe, we cannot see anything other than who we are. Do you understand that? We cannot see anything other than who we are. I told you the story about that lady with the $30 million, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the lady, her son was having a terrible time in school, just being a little jerk, and the same at home. And so they were going to kick him out of school. And she was waiting for him to come in the door, and she was going to paddle him good and say, you little bore him. And so the telephone rang just before he came in. And they said, madam, you just won $30 million. And she says, woo-hoo. She didn't have it. But she changed her consciousness in that second. And he walked in the door, and she says, son, come here. And he thought, oh, boy, am I going to get it now. And she wrapped him in her arms and said, I love you, I love you, I love you. Unconditional love. She had completely forgotten about any past that ever was. This is what we want to learn to do. Completely forget about any past that ever was. If Jesus lived in the past, he could not have done the teachings that he did. Because he only lived in the present. He only taught in the present. And this mother said to her son, run upstairs and change your clothes. I'm going to take you to the sporting goods store to buy all the things you want, the computers and all the jazz you want. And didn't say anything about winning the sweepstakes because she didn't have the money yet. But she changed her consciousness in an instant. And I'm using the story again to tell you that you, in an instant, can change your consciousness. You don't have to have time. You don't have to have 30 years of meditation and wonder when something's going to happen, you know. Now. Now is the time. You see, this is the glorious thing about this. Now is the time. So, you're born new. That's what that really means. You never lived before. There is no past. There's no future. There's only the now. And the mother wasn't thinking that the kid should have all that treat because he was a good boy. She wasn't thinking he should have that treat because he was a bad boy, you know. She wasn't thinking of anything except she wanted to be herself and give, unconditionally loving, without any thought of any reason for it. Do you understand that? Without any thought of any reason for it. You see, you too can do that in any area of your life. And you see, you walked in this church today, and you had the feeling that you were not number one. But the moment you walked in here, I forced you to say, I'm number one. And you thought to yourself, okay, let's see what comes out of this. I'm good for a game. But do you understand now why you're number one? Because you're the only one on the face of the earth that matters to you, and you're the only one that anything should matter to. Because I am number one. I love you, not because you're beautiful, not because you're glamorous, not because you're rich, and all that good stuff, you know. I love you because I love me. I cannot otherwise. I can only do to you what I am. And if I'm hateful, then I can only hate everybody. There now is peace on earth, and it began in my consciousness. It began with me. It's not with somebody else. It's not with somebody else. I have had many students who were very close to me and working very diligently with me and on international levels. And I would send them to various meetings between heads of state as they were trying to come to conclusions of peace or war or whatever they're going to do. And my students went and were there and gave of their presence of the feeling of peace. There now is peace on earth. Their presence, they didn't go, now you be peaceful. And the guy, you know, spit you out and maybe chew you up first and then spit you out. But the thing is, no way. No way. Now, one meeting that I sent them to, they didn't go. They did not feel up to it. And a war was declared. You know, have I spoken to you at all about the Pope? Okay. It was in between the time I was here. So, I was talking with many of the people involved. I don't want to make myself sound big, but I was talking with many of the people because I have this opportunity to do these things, and I don't make a lot of fuss about it. But I was talking to them, and I was saying to the cardinals, I was saying, look, you guys, you want to get rid of him, so one of you can take his place. Why don't you just see the Pope living whole and perfect instead of being released and dead? You know? And all of the cardinals, they were releasing the Pope to death so that they could have his job. Now, that's not bad enough. It's understandable, but that's not bad enough. All the 1 billion Catholics on the face of the earth thought the same thing. They were given this message by their priests and by their prefects and by their cardinals and by their what have yous, that the Pope wasn't feeling too good, and he's old. Oh, he wasn't old. He was old, and so he should be released. They don't realize that today the life expectancy is much longer, and the Pope merely had to have his tonsils taken out, that's all, you know, and something so silly like that. But the thing, if every one of them would have wrapped the Pope in their pure white light of love and saw him whole and perfect, he'd be up dancing and jigging. And I know. I could tell you stories. But I know. And it's wonderful. And you think I don't know about the Mormons? Uh-huh. And the Catholics and the whoever. I'm not trying to say that this is wonderful, but I'm just saying I have fun. I have fun because nobody knows who I am. Because I go there anonymous. Just like here. You think I'm just a nothing, just talking to 10 people here, but here we are, 4, 8 people, and 9, 10. And that you think it's just, why am I wasting my time sharing these thoughts with just 10 people? Well, hey, I'm shy of 2 that Jesus had. He had 12, remember? But they didn't all listen either. In fact, they didn't listen very well at all. What did they try to keep doing to him? Jesus, can we sit on the right and left-hand side of you? You know, our mother says that we should be special because we're better than the rest of the disciples. And Peter, he says, Jesus, don't die. Don't go get yourself hung up. Don't do this. And Jesus said what to him? Get thee behind me, Satan. You're messing up my act. This is my show. This is my game. I have written this script for this program. And this is not the only life that I live. I am multidimensional. I live on all dimensions, as everyone else does too. We live on a zillion dimensions at the same time. And you don't take credit for it. You don't take credit for it. Now, why do any of the members of your family object to some of your religious understanding? Because you don't know what you're living. If you lived your life as an unconditionally loving mother, remember, with no past, no future, an unconditionally loving mother, do you think they'd object? Tell me another joke. They would love you. They would love you if you were an unconditionally loving mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, whatever you are. They would love you. What they don't love is that you're a hypocrite. You say one thing and then you go out and don't practice it. You say, Don is going to the hospital and he's going to have blah, blah, blah. And so let's just know that Don is an older man now and perhaps this is time to step onto the next dimension. Woo! No way, right, Don?
No.
Right. Don is going to the hospital to do whatever he wants to do. But Don doesn't have to go there because I see Don whole and perfect. Now, he can do whatever he wants to do. But when he comes out of that hospital, he's going to be whole and perfect anyhow. That's how he was when he went in there, but he's going to be that way when he comes out. And Don is fantastic. Don is glorious. Don is wonderful. And you see, if that's how I see you, can you be upset with my belief? Oh, yes, you can. I have gone into so many hospitals, and I've told you the stories that I've gone into the hospital, and I've talked to the people, and I have said, well, you want to live or you want to die? You know, what right do you have to ask such a question? Well, because you have the right to ask such a question. Do you want to live or do you want to die? Make up your mind. If you want to die, get it over with. Why spend all that money on hospital bills and take it away from your family because they could use it to squander it away themselves? I mean, they love to do that, you know. But use it yourself. Now, do you want to live? Okay. Well, then stop acting like a mini. Start acting like you are divine. Jesus said, it's done unto you according to your belief. Now, what's your belief about yourself? Is your belief that I'm whole and perfect? Is your belief that I like me? Is your belief that I'm wonderful? So, I told you a story about one man. He had a beautiful wife, 2 beautiful daughters that he had raised to their teens. And one of my ministers called me and said, talk to him. So I talked to him. It was up in Detroit. And I said, well, Henry, how are you doing? And he says, who are you? And I told him. He says, oh, I heard about you. That sort of stuff, you know. And I said, you know, I think you are probably one of the most noble, beautiful people on the face of the earth. Your wife could be Miss Ebony. She is so gorgeous, so beautiful. I understand she really is a charmer, too. And your daughters, both your daughters, they're teenagers. They've just come to the blooming point, and you helped bring them to this quality and this magnificence they are. And now you're going to give her away to another man. Well, I am not. Well, you, I mean, you think that with cirrhosis of the liver and you're dying that you're not going to give her away? You're going to give her away. You watch. You're going to give her away because she's not going to stay unmarried. She loves you. She wants you. She likes you. But if you want to die, she's not going to get upset about it. She'll say, silly. And the flood of Don Juans that'll come into her life saying, you know, you are very special. You are very... And she'd be very choosy. I mean, she's now had a drunken husband. She knows how to handle it. And so she's not going to get herself into that again if she can help it. So, he was very angry at me. And he slammed the receiver down. And the next week, the minister called me. And she says, Herb, what did you say to him? And then she didn't let me say anything. And then she said, do you know that he's home now, completely healed? There's no evidence of cirrhosis of the liver that he was terminal with. And he is an ideal father to his daughters and an ideal husband to his wife, caring. He comes home after work, you know, dutifully and lovingly, enjoying being with his family, you know. Now, do you think he liked me? Do you think he still likes me or ever did? Because, you see, I shook his boat. I shook his boat, and he woke up to the realization that, yes, I am doing it to myself. Yes, I can stop it. Yes, I can put a new cause in motion. Yes, I can be whole and perfect. But not that guy. He didn't tell me that. I told myself. Yeah, I take the credit. Hey, cool. I don't need any credit. I don't need any credit. This is a game of play, and I love it. You don't need any credit. You be a living example to your family, to your relatives, to your friends, to the world. You walk into the Catholic Church here in Farmington, and you go up to the priest and you say, you know, sir, I sat through your talk today, you know, and you are a brilliant man. You have so much wisdom to share with your congregation here. I've never been in a Catholic church before, but when I heard you speak, I could believe why people want to become a Catholic, because you are excellent. You tell the truth about God and about man. You are wise and wonderful. What do you think that priest is going to think about you? Is he going to hate you? He's going to say, what kind of religion are you following? He's going to say, not bad. I had a young couple, and I was the minister of the girl, and the priest was the minister of the boy. And so we had the wedding service in the Catholic Church, and I always liked the other guy to go first. And so the priest gave his part of the service, and then I cleaned it up. And then he gave his part of the service, and I cleaned it up. And he was standing there with his book here and sort of sticking it right in the face of the couple. And there was a you know, they were giggling their hearts out. And so then when he'd back away, I would not change the giggle, but I would change the idea and say, you are born in sin, you are born in misery, da-da-da-da-da-da, and you shall have children in hell and damnation, and so on. And I changed it all over. And I said, you are reborn today. You have that second birth with the second coming of the Christ in you. You are living in wholeness and peace and harmony now. You are fantastic. Your children are going to come out like popcorn, you know, and it's going to be the most wonderful, glorious experience that you ever had in your life. And you're going to say, let's have lots more children, you know, and let's do all these things. And there's a man. He was a nice guy. And I was talking to him, and he said, I asked him, I said, where do you live? And he says, down in the dumpy part of town, you know. He didn't say dumpy part, he said down with the name of the area. What's an area of low income here? Of a low income area of your town? The whole town?
South Farmington.
South End of Farmington. Okay, I live in South End of Farmington. And I said, oh, okay. Well, you speak with such quality, you must have gone to some fabulous university. He said, no, I read a lot, and I have not done that. And he said, I have a very nice home, and I have a job that pays me minimum wage, and I am taking care of my 12 children. 12 children, minimum wage. My God, my God, my God. Now, Susan, listen carefully. This involves you. What is it you have done? He said, well, come, let me show you my home. So I went down to the south end of Farmington, and I saw all these old homes there, very old homes, and his old home. But his old home had a coat of paint on it. His old home had all the garbage picked up in the front lawn and even some grass trying to come up there. And his old home in the backyard, there was no garbage like all the neighbors had. But he wasn't trying to undo the neighbors. He just liked it. The neighbors say, what are you doing that for? Trying to put us to shame? Hey, no. I just like it. You see, I got 12 children to teach. And so I give them the responsibility of keeping these things clean, and that's part of their job. He says, never thought of having the kids do it. But you see, then we came up to his house, and his wife saw us coming, and she came out in the porch, and she says, sweetheart, I'm so glad you're home. He says, yeah, me too. Whenever I'm with you, I'm glad too. And he said, I want you to meet Herb Jim. So she said, hi. And then all 12 children came out, orderly, mannerly, just like my Mormon brother-in-law's kids, you know. Beautiful, beautiful kids, just so super. And so he says, come in the house. And I went in the house, and I said, how do you handle these children like this? Well, he said, every day when we have our meals, I'm feeding 12 children, you know, every day when we have our meals, we're having nice meals, you know, abundant food, and at the table, no comment is brought up about this kid or this kid not being good or not doing well in school or something like that. No comment on that. Everything is just a positive, loving statement of goodness. And I said, wow. And then he said, during each meal, every kid has 5 minutes to talk about some nice thing that happened to them during the day. And so 12 times 5, so they each had their 5 minutes, totally given with courtesy and respect, and each one said something nice. Well then, when they go to bed, oh yeah, that was at evening, they said, kids, we're going to have a family meeting in which we're going to discuss some of our problems. After dinner, after you finish the dishes, we'll have the family meeting. So in the family meeting, he brought up what the circumstances were that they're dealing with and the things that they want to do and that he would like to see done. And then he'd say, now, what do you think of this? And what do you think of this? And each one took an assignment based upon what they thought and did beautifully. Well, then came bedtime. And at bedtime, another 10 minutes for each child. That's 120 minutes, you know? And then Mama had to come in, and Daddy had to come in too for theirs. So he went to each child, she and he, and they sat at their bedside, starting with the youngest ones because they had to get to sleep. And so he would talk to them, and he would say, now, what is it that you've been working on today? What problem have you had? What thing has been giving you a kind of a tough time? Well, the little kids would say whatever they say. And then the kids at 13, you know. Well, Dad, yeah, I had something sticking out of my penis, and I wonder what that is. And he says, oh, how old are you? 13? Yeah. He says, that's the sperm inside of you getting ready to prepare you for manhood so that you can get ready to have children. And that's the sperm saying, hey, I want to come out. I want to come out, you know. And it just comes out. No big deal. The kids don't have any frustration, not any confusion of what's going on. And then another boy says, Dad, I got this hair here. What is this? He says, you're becoming a man. You're becoming mature. Mommy and Daddy have that, and all your adults have that. You're becoming an adult. I'm mature. Yeah, a whole different attitude. And then one of the girls says, Mommy, you told me about menstruation. You told me about these things. I still don't understand. Sweetheart, this is getting you ready to be a mama someday. This is getting you ready to have all of your channels open so that the purity of God can flow through you as the beautiful little children that one day will be yours. Don't rush. It'll happen continuously. It'll say, whenever you're ready, we're ready for you. Your body is in perfect. Now, you work with that so your body is in perfect condition. And then another girl said, Dad, Dad. Yeah? Jackie, he dumped me. Well, does Jackie have a right to choose the friends he wants to have? Yeah. Does Jackie have a right to choose a different girlfriend if he wants to? Yeah. Do you have a right to choose a different girlfriend, boyfriend if you want? Yeah. Or a different special, real special girlfriend, you know, the one and only girlfriend? Yeah. But just remember, Jackie is doing his thing and you're doing yours. You were a couple for a long time. And so now, just release him. You go tell Jackie, Jackie, been good to know you. So she went to Jackie. And she says, Jackie, I like you. We've been a couple a long time, and I like you. Now, I know that you like Marjorie now, and that you want to be a couple with Marjorie. And Jackie, Marjorie is so lucky to have a wonderful guy like you. Go and enjoy. Now, who's in charge? Who's in charge? You see, it's not a matter that, they kicked me, they dumped me. It's a matter of who's in charge. You see, when we always are in charge of every circumstance in our life, really, then life's not a tragedy. Life is a triumph under all circumstances. It's wonderful. And so then, Mom and Papa go to bed, and Mama says, well, Dad, how was your day today? He said, well, he says, did you have any frustrations today? And he says, no. He said, I had a few challenges, but I always know that I am loved, and I love all the challenges, and pretty soon they turn out to be just normal things, and they work out just beautiful. And she says, I'm so glad I married you. You're such a wonderful guy. And he says, well, it takes the two of us. You're the same way. That's why I married you. And then he says, sweetheart, what's your thing from today? And she says, well, my beloved, raising 12 children, feeding 12 children on a minimum on a minimum income is not the easiest thing in the world. And he said, well, you know, so many times people eat pounds and pounds of food that don't mean a thing. They eat all this food that just doesn't satisfy them at all. They still want more because they don't recognize eating foods should be a blessing. Now, their kids were taught to chew 20 times with every mouthful. Even milk, Mom? Even milk. Silly? But you know, it's a game. Okay, so they liked lots of food. And so he said to his wife, he said, sweetheart, just cut back on the amount of food you buy. And he said, think about it. Always buy quality food, but buy foods that are necessary, beneficial to the body, to these young growing children, whatever they need. They don't need a lot of garbage. They don't need store-made soups, which are so totally salt that it just destroys their system. They don't need all of these other things. They, you know, if I had known about it before, I would have told them to come over here and talk to the new authoress, you know, and get her book on diet, you know, on a special cookbook for real people. And you see, then they would know what foods to get. And it's not the volume that you want. You see, as the daddy and mama were talking to their 12 kids at the table while they're eating, and they were saying lovely things, the kids would get so wound up in the stories that dad would tell of his activities during the day, they would stop eating. You know, it wasn't hungry that drove them. It was the need for love, the need for sharing, the need for being encompassed in that family. And the children were all healthy children. You all know, scientists tell us today, that rats who are fed a very comfortable diet die in their normal lifespan. Rats who are given, it's a terrible word to say, a starvation diet, but a very minimal diet, live 3, 4, 5 lifetimes. Lifetimes! You see, we're killing ourselves off by giving us so much food that we don't need. And I'm right with you there. But the thing is, we're killing us off by giving us far more food than we need. Because we've been trained that way. We've been studied that way by our parents and our family. And you keep it up even when you're on your own. And your mom and dad probably aren't living anymore, are they? But they're living here and here. And every time you think of your plate, you say, well, mom used to make it this way and stuff like that. You know? But it never ends. You see, those are memories of yesterday that are guiding our life today in a very unhappy way. You follow me? It's a very strange and a very uncomfortable and unfortunate thing. But we do not ever want to allow ourselves to be guided by what other people think. If the world says there's going... I can't say that here. You don't have the governor of California, Mr. Schwarzenegger. Well, everybody thought Mr. Schwarzenegger was going to be a flop as a governor, you know? That it was just, you know, powder puff and show and stuff like that. And he is magical. He has a wife who is super into politics. He has been super into politics with every president. We don't know the magic that this man has experienced in his life, but now watching him as governor, and they hate him, the political circles. They hate him because he's getting things done. And he's getting things done in a loving way. And he's getting things done for the people. You understand that? He's getting things done for the people. He's reducing taxes. He's reducing a lot of things. He's changing a lot of things. He's increasing the health benefits for people. And he's doing all of these things for the people. Now, you see, if we had less bridges, now this is a silly statement to make. If we had less bridges, people would stay home more. And they would have a happy family relationship more. And they would have better health. Because better health comes from a happy family relationship. You know that. What do some mothers do who are in the outback? Some mothers in the outback, they don't have medicine for their children. They don't have the things that they need. They go to the witch and they get the, or what do you call it, the folk tales, the folk medicines and stuff like that. And they give these to their family and they work. And what's a medicine that the mother gives? She takes a healthy child and takes the urine from a healthy child and feeds it to the sickly child. And all of the aspects of a healthy child are in that urine, and not a bunch of it, you know, maybe just a glass, but and they drink it, and within a very short time, the child is back on his feet feeling perfect. Because all of the enzymes, all of the whatever's are in that body chemistry that the child excreted his excess, the other child was getting. They have all sorts of names for it. But I know it sounds gross to some of you, but would you like to have a healthy, beautiful child when you have no other medicine? Try it. Try it on yourself sometimes. Try it on yourself. Because you'll be surprised that it's not as bad as it seems. It's just your mental attitude about it. This is something that animals have known for a lifetime. And they have done it. This is something that birds and bees and the chestnut trees have all been aware of throughout all of their existence. Now, you have the opportunity of creating yourself as a machine of perfect health. And the way you create yourself as a machine of perfect health is to see yourself perfect health. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Instead of saying, I'd like to be number one, you know, and instead of saying, you know, I'd like to be whole and perfect, I am. Remember Snow White and Seven Dwarfs? Remember that show? You remember it, don't you? Mm-hmm. Did you cry? And it was a nice show. And what did the stepmother say? The stepmother constantly was saying, "Mel, Mel on the wall, who is the most beautiful of all? Not you, you old witch." Snow White. And well, Snow White's dead. She is not dead. She is living with these with these little men in the forest, you know. Well, for goodness sakes. And no matter what she tried to do, you see, she was always ugly. And she thought of herself as ugly. She may have been quite beautiful, but she thought of herself as ugly because somebody else was more beautiful than she. You see, if I look at you and say, "Oh, what a physique you have. Wow, you know, I should have a physique like that," I'll never have it. When I say, "I have a perfect physique. My chest is out, my shoulders are back, my chin is up, and I feel just like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I feel wonderful." And as I continue to do that, miracles happen. Miracles happen. We have our 80-year-old Ingeborg at the ranch, and she's a monk, and she's a good lady. But there are times that she gets like this, you know, like the granny drop. And I say, "Ingeborg, oh, oh yeah, okay," and throws her shoulders back up with the chin. I said, "Ingeborg, you are a princess. Princesses don't walk like an old hag. Now, if you're going to drag, you know, and tip yourself down like this, and people are going to say, she's an old lady." I said, "Ingeborg, you're not an old lady." Did you know that? You know what she does? She has a golf cart that is just for her. The other ones are too fast. So I don't let her use those. I just let her use this one that is 15 miles an hour driving around 104 acres. And her greatest joy is to take her little trailer behind her golf cart. And wherever she sees sticks laying down on the ground, she picks them up and puts them in there. And then if she sees any, we have international travelers going through our property quite frequently, you know, and they leave their water bottles and they leave their socks and they leave their backpacks and all sorts of things. I don't know why they leave them, because they weren't not bad. They were lovely things, but they left them. So she goes around picking them up, and then we have a big dumpster, and it's emptied every week, and she fills it. And if that dumpster isn't full just before the dump man comes, she has to get out there, double duty, and work to pick up stuff and fill it up. And she lifts those things up, and she says she needs a stool so she can get up into the dumpster, you know. And 80 years old? I said, "Ingeborg, don't you ever dare walk around crunched over like that in my sight. Never." And I said, "Ingeborg, do this. Out with the fingers. Oh, it feels good. You know? Oh, that feels good. How are your fingers? Oh, that feels good. How is your body? Oh, that feels good." You see, how do you explain something like that to your relatives and your friends? How do you explain that to anybody? And who gives a hoot and holler in hell? The only thing that matters is whether you do it yourself. Now, if Jane here, this elusive Jane, if Jane here wants to go around saying, "I haven't got any money, I don't have any friends, I don't have anything in the world, everything is taken from me, I have nothing," and you look at her and you say, I don't want to be around that person. I don't want to be around that person at all. You see? Now, why not? Because that's not the attitude you want to have in your world. So, she lives in hell. She has everything terrible. Always moaning, moaning, moaning. And then, I take her to the ranch. And I say, and they have had other names. And I take them to the ranch and I say, all right, Jane, you're here as a monk. These are the rules. If you will follow the rules, I guarantee you, when you choose to leave here in 10 minutes or 10 hours or 10 days or 10 years or 10 months, whatever you do, when you leave here, you're going to be the happiest lady alive, with the healthiest body alive, with the most magnificent attitude alive, and you will just like yourself and enjoy yourself. Hey, you do what I tell you. And so then they start doing what I tell them. Have happy thoughts. There's a bluebird on my shoulder. Every day he's older. Every day he's getting bolder. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay. Wonderful feeling. Wonderful day. And sing that, sing that, sing that, you know. And then sing it. I like me, 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 I like me. I am thin, can't you see? I am thin, can't you see? I am thin, I am thin, can't you see? Can't you see? I don't have muscles, I have sinew. I don't have muscles, I have sinew. Do you know what sinew is? When the sinew of your body is like when you're a teenager and like when you're in your 20s, you know, you are just muscle and strength and power, but you don't have these big bulging things, you know. You don't need those big bulging things. Because the big bulging things turn into fat later in life, you know. But sinew never does. And when you have a sinewy body, you look at the Greek and Roman statues of the healthy young men who were running in the Olympics and so forth, you know, and they always ran naked. And you look at their bodies and they're sinewy. They're fantastic. David got a little chunky there, but most of them are just sinewy and beautiful. And they're wonderful. And tell me what Tsitsiri looks like. The goddess of love and dance. What did she look like? Was she a Twiggy type? Or was she a Venus de Milo type? No, fat. No, no. Well, what was Terpsichore like? What would you describe Terpsichore being, the goddess of dance?
Well, kind of like a brick outhouse. Maybe.
Like what?
Like a brick outhouse.
You're wonderful, I love you. No, she wasn't like a ship brick outhouse, but a brick outhouse. But no, she was built. Sinewy. She had a shapely breast, she had a shapely butt, she had shapely legs, she had shapely arms. She wasn't skinny. She wasn't a twiggy. She had content to her body. And when she danced so lithely and so beautifully, she was the goddess of dance, the goddess of beauty and so forth. Now, Venus de Milo, what was she out picturing? That was the goddess of voluptuous love. Who was the god of wine?
Dionysus.
No. The goddess of wine is named after him. It doesn't come to me. But anyhow, he was chunky, and he was bubbling through all the time and doing all these things. But you see, it represented the symbol that he was. Now, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a dynamic, young, beautiful person? No. Do you want to be a dynamic, beautiful person? Yes, which you are. Do you want to be a person who has eternal youth? Yes. In a perfect body. In a perfect mind. Right? Eternal youth, and the word youth is wrong there, but live eternally in a perfect body and a perfect mind. You see, youth, unfortunately, says with it lack of maturity, you know. And we don't mean that. Now, we don't mean when we were in our 25s or in our 30s or in our 40s. We don't mean that. We mean the ideal. And you don't know what your ideal self is. My ideal. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Well, now, your spirit, you can say, is marvelous. Yeah. Your mind is the allness. Now, your body is not the allness. Yeah, your body is what? What is the vehicle that expresses who you are? What is the vehicle that expresses, what's your ideal body? Your ideal body. And none of you have really thought about this much because, you look at a picture and you say, that's a nice body, but, you know, you don't want it because you know the person who lives in it. You see, people can have what are called very nicely developed bodies, and as they would say, a dumb blonde, you know, and as they say about the sports players, you know, they are in college just to play sports. They're not in college to do the college courses. Now, if with the same enthusiasm they did the sports, they did their college courses, they'd be brilliant. They'd be brilliant. Now, they did pick up things along the way, and many of the brilliant sportsmen became businessmen of outstanding acumen, and we can too. Now, why did they wait? Did they need those glory years of being a sportsman? Did they need those glory years of having everybody applaud them? Do they need that Robert Schuller period where they have the big glass cathedral that everyone comes to worship them in, you know? Yeah? Do they need Billy Graham who goes into the Shriner auditoriums and fills them to overflowing? It's not bad, not bad, you know? But is that what you want? You see, I'm going to tell you this now, and I want you to remember it all your life. If you will tell people what they want to hear, they will come and hear you and flood your congregation, fill your churches, fill your auditorium. If you will tell people what they want to hear, and I could do that quite easily if I wanted to, but if you tell people that they are already accomplished, that they are already good, they don't have to wait to walk on the paved stones of gold in heaven to drive in the Cadillac that, you know, our friend would like them having there. But that's okay. That's okay. You are a sinner. You are going to hell. You are doing this here until you praise God, until you turn your life over to Jesus. You will always be that way. And you say, yeah, what can I do? What can I do? You know, but you're not a sinner. You don't even know what sin is. You can't even spell it. You think it's spelled S-I-N. It's spelled G-O-D. G-O-D is all. There is nothing else in the universe but God. And did God create everything? Huh? Yeah. Did God create you? Did God create everything that exists? And do you think that God could put into anything less than good? Everything that God created was good. In fact, God spoke about it in the first chapter of Genesis. And he pronounced, everything is good and very good. And in the first chapter of Genesis, he told man and woman to go forth and multiply. He didn't say, have a tough time at it. In the second chapter, that's where the trouble came. That's where humanity came in. Now you see, we want to be in our original purity and integrity. Now how can we live in our original purity and integrity when we have the slightest idea what it is? How can we live in it? Because, all right, what did you say to yourself all the time? I'm meditating, I'm listening to Divine Within, I'm meditating, I'm meditating, I'm meditating, I'm meditating. She's saying, I'm meditating for years. I'm meditating, I'm meditating. Now, what do I teach you to say? I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. Now, you see, even music came on. Heavenly music came on to tell the story that I know, that I know, that I know God is the answer. Because that's the story. Now, the minute she said that to herself, I know that I know that I know God is the answer, then the little angel whispered in her ears and says, that's you. Complete and whole and perfect right now. That's you. That's you, 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 and him. Complete and whole and perfect right now. You see, it's not something to come tomorrow. We were talking about science and some of the lovely things that they do. And what does science do? Science says, there is only now. You cannot live in any moment other than the now. You can't. You cannot live in any moment but the now. And you can only live in that now moment here, wherever your consciousness thinks that it is. And she thinks her consciousness is skiing down the Swiss Alps. So skiing down the Swiss Alps is what she's doing with her consciousness in the now. You see? And when you say to a young boy, you say, oh boy, we're training you to be a race car driver. Already, it's in the now. He's not training. He is one. He's driving that car with all the skill that he has not even dreamed he could have. Doesn't even know that is necessary to have before he goes any further. But this is the glory of this here. This is the glory of living for yourself. If you walk into your family and you have that great big golden smile on your face, and they look at you and they say, wow, where you been? Did you just have sex? You know? And she'll say, well, in a way, yes. Yes, I had a relationship with myself. I found out how nice I am. But you don't say that, because they won't understand that. You just say, keep guessing. Keep guessing. I'm a happy lady. I am so happy. I'm so fulfilled. I'm a happy lady. And you say, my goodness sakes, you know, what do you have to be happy for? When you left the house before, you were very upset because the bills weren't paid, and you were upset because these people weren't doing what they're supposed to do. And now you come in here, and you're just like you're a totally different person. Like, you don't even belong in this family. Like, you know, you're some strange cat that came in somehow or other. But you see, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Living in the now. There's no past. There's no future. Living in the now. Now, this mother continued with the budget. She didn't ask her husband, why don't you get more money? She just said, okay. He says, if I had a better job, I'd be spending more time on it, and I wouldn't be at home as much with the family as I want. And I think that being home with my family is the most wonderful thing in the world. I could eat much, much less and still be happy with my family. My family is so glorious to me that I am not going to get myself a big job and then all of a sudden fall in love with my job and forget my family, which is what happens to a majority of the husbands and wives. In fact, even the wives, they forget their role. They're supposed to be barefoot and pregnant, and they're not supposed to be out. They're not supposed to be out. They're not supposed to be out. But if they want to be out, then they don't go having children, unless their husband wants to stay home and take care of them. And you don't want nannies to raise your children. You don't want babysitters to raise your children. Because you want those children, if you want the children at all, to have your values. You want them to have the things that you feel are important. You want your children to know who you are. You want your children to be the glorious expression of the divinity that you are. You see, you cannot give away raising your children to someone else. Now, I'm taking this a step further. Your thoughts are our children. Our thoughts are our children. Now, what school are you sending your thoughts to? The positive school? The school of joy? The school of truth? As a man thinketh, so is he. Are you sending your thoughts to the school that says, hey, I'm the rich man, and I'm not going to follow this teaching here and give up all my riches, especially not to the poor, because I'll never get it back. I may give it to my mother and say, Mother, just hold this. If I like this deal, and I'm going to stick with it. Otherwise, I want my money so I can, you know, go back to be a rich man again. You see, are we willing to give ourselves totally over to whatever it is that we feel is something important to us? Are you willing to totally, totally, totally forget something else? Forget everything else in the world and just think about what it is. Now, this will burn your bridge a little bit. What it is that makes you happy. That's all that matters. What makes you happy? Do you know what makes you happy? No, you don't. You really don't. If you knew what made you happy, theoretically, you'd go to do it. And if you knew that something was making you unhappy, theoretically, you would not do it. But you do it unconsciously. You do it unconsciously because that's what's been put into your minds and hearts and into your thinking from childhood on. You know? That's my toy. Now you take care of your toys. And you don't go letting the neighbors share your toys. You don't let the neighbor kids run around with your toys. That's your toy. Now, when you come home, you'll bring that home. And if you smash up that toy, you're not getting another one. Oh, that's possession. I'm your dad. And I give you a fire truck. You say, thanks, Dad. And you play with the fire truck. And Joey next door comes over and he says, wow, what a great fire truck. Can I play with it? Sure. Can I take it home? Sure. You know? The kid's not possessed. If his dad gives him another one, great. If he doesn't, great.
Dad will give him hell, usually.
Huh?
Dad will give him hell, usually.
No. But I'm saying, if his dad would give him another one, dad would give him hell. You see, this is where we've been raised. The dad would give us hell. Because you don't go giving your toys away. My goodness. And, you know, I have a dog, a beautiful golden retriever. And he was this high. And he's this high now. And when he jumps up on you, he knocks you over. And I say, down, Rex, down. And we have a mini pin and a mini schnauzer. And, you know, they're just little runts. And so they're the older ones. Rex is the kid. He's not even 2 years yet in December. So I put down some food for Rex. And Love, the mini pin, and Button, the mini schnauzer, Button not so much, but Love will come over and try to take some of his food. Rah! And I say, Rex, we don't do that. I said, Rex, now share. Now, Love, come on over here. Come on, Love, you can eat too. Go ahead. And Button, come on over here, I'll give you some of Rex's food. And it didn't take more than two or three times of doing that. And Rex doesn't care. Rex doesn't care. Now, I have to make another change. Rex goes to their bowl. And he says, you know, if they can eat from mine, I can eat from theirs. And you see, I have to teach balance. Because one mouthful, oh, and he has their whole supper. But this is lovely. You see, now, we're talking logic. And we're talking how the principle can be understood or misunderstood, however you want to do it. And when you realize that what really matters is that you are unconditionally loving, that's great. Rex always gets his breakfast at 4 o'clock in the morning and his supper at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, because I usually get up about 3:30 or 4. And so some days I am working on some meditation programs, and I'm working on my meditation program, and it's 6 o'clock. Oh, how'd that happen? You know, and he's just laying there. He didn't say, "Dad, where's my supper? Where's my breakfast? Where's my breakfast?" You know, he doesn't do that. He knows it'll be there. He's never hungry. That is, he's always hungry. But he's never anxious to push the time because he's not being fed. Because he knows I'll take care of him, and he knows that. he doesn't have to worry about a thing. He doesn't have to worry about a thing. And he gets frisky and he jumps up and down and has a wonderful time, just like you guys. You get frisky and you jump up and down and you have a wonderful time, and then you say to yourself, oh my goodness sakes, what do I do now? What do I do now? And I say, gentle, 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 loving, gentle, loving, gentle, loving. And pretty soon, he's got the message. Pretty soon, you have the message. Unconditional love will solve every problem on the universe. In the universe. Now, Susan Barnes, do you promise to love, honor, and obey? Do you have unconditional love for your cookbook? Now, don't answer it right away because I don't think you thought about it. But do you have unconditional love for your cookbook? If you have unconditional love for your cookbook and stop looking for errors in it, stop looking for imperfection in it, start saying it is good and very good, sell like hotcakes. You know? Once you have unconditional love for anything, it will be a fulfilling adventure for you. Now, what kind of people is it for? For real people?
For real people?
Have you ever met a real people? Yes, you are one. You are one. And so she is creating this to give out to real people. And real people are going to just flock to it. They won't know why they're flocking to it, but they'll flock to it because in there they will find not necessarily the truth. They will find great wisdom. You follow me? People don't want the truth. But they... No, they don't.
Well, in recipes they do.
I'm sorry?
In recipes they do.
No. You don't understand. They want wisdom. Now, you're... Why in the hell do you go from one recipe book to another? Because you're looking for something that has the wisdom that speaks to you. Because they're all true. They're all true. They are recipes that this person theoretically has tried, and they like it. But you don't know what their pH balance is. You don't know what their sugar quota is. You don't know whether they're diabetic or whether they're bumpy boobie. You know, you have no idea. And so those things all affect their taste. Now, my dear friend of mine, been with me since 1972, three, from Minneapolis. And she has been a school food service director for Minneapolis, for Los Angeles, and for, I believe, Long Beach, too. And she has no taste. Now, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. All she was the administrator for the whole thing. And then she also was a nurse. And she was a what do you call the nurse, dietitian. She was a dietitian in the hospital in New York. But, I mean, all her life, and she never had any taste buds. I mean, it seems outrageous. But, you see, what did she work with? She worked with principle. She worked with whatever the federal government's pyramid might be that week, you know, or whatever the scientific story might be that month or something like that. And then she was current on all these things. And whether the food tasted any good or not, I don't know. I don't think I've ever eaten at her home. But we've always gone out to eat. But the thing is, I'm sure she was a very adequate cook. But that was not her job. Her job was to make sure that there were sufficient portions of whatever it was they decided to have in all the schools so that the children would have a balanced lunch and a balanced afternoon, dinner, evening program before they went home to their no meal, you know, in some of their poor areas. But you see, this is the principle. Now, here you have a person who is in a very high position, very well paid. And it wasn't because she could taste. Taste was not a requirement. She did not go around tasting the meals. Oh, she may have done it for show, but she not a valid taster. And yet, she was exquisite, and she was sought after, and she was highly paid and highly respected. You see, you may not have taste buds. You may not have a lot of things, because in your background, in your history, you have not developed those things. But that does not mean that today you can use the principle without understanding the background of it. I know something that Mr. Randy can never come up with a solution for. Randy, why is 2 times 2 4? He says, because. Because. But why is 2 plus 2 4? Because, you know. Now, I mean, that's irrational, unreasonable, and so forth. Why is 2 minus 2 nothing? You got 2, and you got 2, and now you got nothing, you know. How come you got nothing, you know? And you see, these are irrational things. But it is a principle that has been defined so that we have something to work with. Randy, why is unconditional love unconditional love, with love without conditions? Because that's how you define the word. Unconditional means it has no conditions defining whatever it is you're doing. I love my wife, I love my world unconditionally, without conditions. I will love you if we stay married, and if we don't stay married, well then, you know, let's go fly a kite, you know. I don't even want to know you, you know. But what did she say to the girlfriend, the boyfriend? She says, Jackie, I know Marilyn loves you. I know you and Marilyn are doing the thing, and she's a very lucky girl. And you go and enjoy yourself, because I surely enjoyed knowing you. You're a wonderful guy. She's in charge. Now, how did that come about? What was the transfiguration of that set of terms and set of ideas to bring about that attitude where now she gave him away, you know, where he dumped her just moments before? But you see, it's all attitude. It's attitude about unconditional love. It's attitude about diet. It's attitude about how we raise our children. It's attitude about how we raise ourselves. And there is no past. There is no future. There is only the now. Now, are you beautiful?
Of course.
Not of course. Yes. Of course.
Of course I am. You think I'm not.
But no. Yes.
Yes.
That's defensive. See, of course is defensive. And we all do that, you know. Are you God?
Yes.
Very, 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 very hesitant, but she said the right thing. Now, the more she goes around saying, I am God, God I am, 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 I am God, God I am. The more you say that, the more your inner reservation disappears, and the more you recognize the truth for yourself. You see? The more you recognize it. Now, you see, the people who have difficulty in recognizing the truth about themselves are people who worship somebody else, who worship Jesus, who worship their music teacher, who worship their teacher in school. Oh, my teacher's so wonderful, my teacher's so wonderful, my teacher's so wonderful. And what did the teacher do? The teacher got you to be interested in the subject. And all of a sudden, you're interested in the subject. Now, your teacher's so wonderful. But just a moment before, your teacher couldn't quite get across to you the interest in the subject. Goes, oh, my teacher stinks. My teacher doesn't know nothing. You know, my teacher. But the moment the teacher gets across to you, and that's what teachers should teach, fall in love with the subject. When you fall in love with the subject is already twice learned. Because then you just reveal what you already know of the universal knowledge within you. Fall in love with the subject. I taught piano lessons when I was in college. I couldn't play the piano. But I could teach piano lesson. I had my student buy a piano book. He thought I knew everything. Because, yeah, I let people think that. And so he bought the piano book. And I said, all right, now practice. Da 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 da. And he did it. And I said, I want you to practice this a half hour every day. Half hour every day? No, I want you to practice an hour every day. You can't make me do it. No, but you'll do it. And so he did it. An hour every day. And within a week, he was playing tunes. I should have been doing that too. But I had other things to do. But I was just teaching him. I was just teaching him. And after a year, he was quite good. Quite good. And he not only could play by notes, he could play by ear. But he had a love for it. In fact, he had his own little band that he was starting up at the end of that year. But you see, you don't have to know how to do these things. You just put the principle in motion. Now, Randy, he says 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4, 2 times 2 is 4, and pretty soon, 2 times 2 is 4, you know? And 2 times 4 is 8, 2 times 8 is 16, 2 times 16 is 32, and do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then minus 16 is nothing. How'd they get there, you know? But, you see, he just practiced. You know when you're in school, the teacher gives you these cards with the things on, and it says 2 minus 1 equals, and then you turn it over. Oh. So, you see, that's one way. You're training yourself. You're training. I am God. God I am. How can I say it? Because God is everything. I am God. God I am. Why can I say that? Because there's nothing but God in the universe. I am God. God I am. Well, God is the creator. And God created me, and I am the creator. And I'm fantastic. You see? When you start realizing these things and start putting them into your consciousness and putting them into your mind, then you begin having that experience. You know, and that's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Isn't it a wonderful thing that you are the creator of your world? You are the ones who set the cause in motion for whatever you want in your life, anything you want in your life, and it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter. All of you have with you today your worst enemy. And that's yourself. Yourself belittles yourself so tremendously, nobody else in the world has to do it. You kick yourself around the block a dozen times for not having done something or for having done something, and hey, it's over. It's over. Did you learn something from it? Yeah, I'm not going to do that again. I'm reading a program put out by Holosynchron. In the program, the guy is constantly saying, well, now, I overdosed on this vibratory program that I did, and I did it for 6 hours a day, and then I felt so good, I wanted to do it for the seventh hour, and I wanted to go on, and then I was sick in bed for 6 weeks, and then finally I was get back to myself again, and I thought, why do you tell people things like that? Why do you tell people? That's your past. Now, you say, and then he says, which is all so bad. He says, I don't meditate anymore. He says, I don't do these things anymore. And here he's teaching courses in meditation. And he says he doesn't meditate anymore. Doesn't that sound fascinating? Doesn't it sound like something you really want to do? But what's that?
Because he overdid it?
No. Because he thinks he's beyond it.
No.
But you see, I'll ask you a stupid question. Do you think the Pope prays?
Yes.
I think so. If the Pope didn't pray, he couldn't teach it. If the Pope didn't pray, he couldn't go out and show. Now, did Jesus pray?
Yes.
Huh? Huh? Yeah, remember? Remember? Mm-hmm. You bet he did. Now, what did he pray? That's the big thing. What did Jesus pray?
We know what he prayed in the garden.
What's that?
We know what he prayed when he was in the garden.
Well, we have a rendition of it. Yeah, that's okay. But basically what Jesus prayed was that God is good and all is good. Didn't he say that? God is good and all is good. He said, look, you silly. You've got the entire Old Testament, the entire teachings of the Hebrew history in front of you. And I'm not saying to blow it, but I am saying I am giving you two commandments that go beyond anything that has ever been done before. And the first command, but he also taught, where is God? Where did Jesus say God was? Within. Go to the temple within, and there God is within. So he said, the first thing, love the Lord thy God with all the heart and all the soul and all thy being, right in here. Love this God right in here, which is what he said for us to do. And then what did he say? Love your neighbor like you like yourself. Now, if you don't like yourself very well, how can you like your neighbor very well, you know? If you think that you're a bad person, an evil person, then you're going to think that about your neighbor. And if you think you're a good person, then you're going to think that about your neighbor. And if you are really a good person, you cannot possibly think that your neighbor is bad. Did you know that my neighbor, woman, that she had a man in her house, and they were sitting drinking all late into the evening, and when I got up to go to the bathroom about 2 o'clock in the morning, they were still sitting there yakking away and drinking champagne or something or whatever they were drinking. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, what would her husband think of that? Well, what does it turn out to be? That's her brother that she hasn't seen for 20 years. And they had so much to talk about, so much to reminisce on, so much to bring each other up to date. They were just so happy, happy, happy with each other. And sex was the farthest thing in the moon from where they were. Doing something wrong was the farthest thing from their minds that could ever be imagined. But the neighbor who was capable of doing the farthest thing, for him it was normal. And so he expected that of them. Now, you, if you ever, and of course I know your trade, being a lawyer is a little difficult, but if you ever deal with somebody that you don't believe in, if you ever have a neighbor you don't believe in, or if you ever have a family member you don't believe in, if your child cannot come up to you and say, Dad, I didn't do that, and if you don't say, son, I know you didn't, now let's find out what's behind all of that. Okay, fine. But yes, son, I believe in you. Yes, son, I know you didn't do it. Yes, son, it is beyond, you don't have to say all that nonsense. Yes, son, I believe in you. You know what I mean? Then you find the solution. And generally speaking, the solution is so simple and so stupid, but totally totally freeing the child from any blame at all. You understand? But if you have doubt, if you think he might have done it, then the tide can turn and show that he did it even though he didn't do it. This has happened so often in court cases. This has happened so often in mother-father-child relationship program, where the mother thinks, surely that kid did it because he's the one that's always full of nonsense, you know. And he perhaps had nothing to do with it. But the child who is the most outgoing, the most fun-loving child, they're usually the ones that are blamed, you know. They're usually the ones that are thought that did it. Now, I had a younger brother, Howie, and he was 4 years younger than me and just a pain in the neck to me all the time because he wanted to be with me and do things with me. And I had older friends that I was with. So we had a recreation room in the basement of our house. And in that recreation room, my dad had a bar, and he had scotch and all that good stuff, and cigarettes and cigars and other things. And Howie would take his friends down there, and they would drink that stuff, and they would smoke, you know. Now, the four of us older children had no interest in drinking, no interest in smoking. I mean, it was available, you know. We didn't like it. Who wants that stupid stuff, you know? And we didn't want it, but Howie liked it because he knew he was being a naughty boy. And he was my dad's favorite. And my dad never found out that it was Howie that did it. He always thought it was my older brother, Ray. And Ray could care less about that, you know. But he said it was my older brother, Ray. And Ray got the blame for so many things because he was never around. But that was the best way to have it, because then there's nobody to complain. But you see, when you cast doubt upon anything, Now, if I said to you, if I said to my brother, Howie, did you do those things? You know what he'd say? No. No, I never did those things. Now, is he telling the truth? Maybe he is. Maybe he is. Maybe I'm giving you a false impression because of the obvious information that was given to me by my parents and my family, you know. Now, is that fair to my brother? I took Ellen, my associate, to visit my brother when we were in Virginia, where he lives, and she says, you say he's such a terrible guy. He's a nice guy. He's a wonderful guy. What do you mean he's so terrible? And why do you talk like that about him? He's a nice guy. Well, now, that's good. What do I want her to think about my brother? That he's a nice guy. Because what? She is a nice lady. Now, her son, I think I may have told you the story, her son was in school, and her husband was very wealthy, and they lived in a penthouse apartment, you know, buku, thousands of feet, you know, big, oh, real rich. And the girl went through school just fine, and the boy was 2 years behind, and he went through school, and he had his other interests. And so the teacher called her in and said, I want to talk to you. And she says, about my genius son. She just got done working with me on knowing that he's a genius son. And she said, about my genius son. He says, send your husband in here. So then she told her husband, Alias, to go in. And Alias went in, and Alias says, now what do you want me to tell me about my genius son? You know what that guy did? That teacher said, my God, have I missed something? Did I not find the truth about this boy? Was I looking at him from a different point of view? And he came out top of the class. Because the teacher began to expect him to be the best. Expect him to be good. And he was wonderful. Today, he is a top banker in Lugano, and he's vice president of his bank, and fantastic, fantastic guy. And he and his wife had a tattoo because she was very wealthy and he was wealthy. He was a banker and she was the top, she was the head, what do you call it, tax collection department for the city, you know. I mean, you know, she is a big wheel, earning lots of money. And so they were having difficulty to get along. They had a son who was about 7 at the time. And so he said, I just can't take it anymore. And so he left the house. They had just spent $1 million remodeling their house. Remodeling it, not building new, but remodeling the house. My goodness. So he left, and she was very unhappy, of course, because she didn't kick him out. But she was very unhappy. So I said to Ellen, I said, you know, we've never really been over to visit her. They never invited us, you know. And so I said, tell her to invite us to dinner. And so she had Lorenza invite us for dinner, and we went for dinner. And Lorenza had these knives in her hand that she was cutting up the salad, you know, with all the enthusiasm in the world. And I said, Lorenza! And she only spoke Italian, so it had to be translated for her. I said, Lorenza, I love you! And I grabbed her and I hugged her.
With the knife?
With the knife. Yeah, with the knife. Yeah, woof! Well, I believe in me. And so she dropped the knives and hugged me for a half an hour. And I talked to her. And I told her what a wonderful person she is, how much we thought of her, how much her husband loves her and respects her and likes her, but now he has another interest, you know, and that we don't own each other. We free each other to go our way if we lose interest, if we forget that we should just work on that relationship we have to make it perfect, you know, but he has the right to do that. And I said to her, I said, you know, you are, and she was like Terpsichore, you know, a good looking body, but she was dressed like prim, you know, tight here and, you know, tight clothes and everything, making her look like a witch, you know. And so, a business executive or something like that, you know. And so, after this half hour of hugging, we had a nice dinner, and Ellen translated everything I said to her. And when I left, she hugged and kissed me goodbye and said, that was the most wonderful time of her entire life. And every time Ellen would talk to her after that, she would say, tell her I love him, tell her I love him, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So then she was going to go to a party in which it was a feel sorry for myself party, you know, that I lost my husband. And she was going to, you know, what do you call him, put him on the hot plate.
Oh, yeah.
You know, roast him. That's the word. That's the word, roast him. She was going to roast him. And so I heard about it. And so I just said, Lorenzo, you're going to roast him with your love and my mind. And so that evening, her sister-in-law was there, too, and because she still loves her sister-in-law. And that evening, instead of roasting her husband, she did not say one word about him the entire evening, but just said how much she appreciated her friend standing by her and how much she felt that life was taking a new look for her. So what happened to her next? What happened to her next was that she had a boyfriend. She had a boyfriend who was equal to her standards, and he had a beautiful yacht on the lake, and they went yachting, and then on the Mediterranean he had another yacht. And then he had a lovely home there in Lugano, and they tete-a-tete. And then he wanted her to take 2 weeks to come visit him in Venezuela, where he had about 3 or 4 square miles of sheep ranch, you know. And she'd never been to a sheep ranch. And so she went down there, and he treated her just like a queen, you know, total respect, total respect. And, of course, they're still going hot and heavy together. But, you see, she did not know the doors that would open. And I told her, I said, Lorenzo, you're a beautiful woman. Let it out. And so the next day, she went to the hairdresser, had her hair all done, changed color. And then she got all this beautiful clothing. And she got these shoes with heels a mile high. I don't, you know, just totally different. And everybody at her office, they said, what a woman, ho, 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 you know. And she continued to dress beautifully, 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 and she began to like herself. Her whole world began to change. And many, many stories go on about it. But the point is, you see, I did not judge her. I just loved her. I surrounded her with my pure white light of love, and I said, I love you unconditionally, you know. I love you, I love you, you know. And she got the message that I was real, that I wasn't just doing this to make her feel good or you know, to help the situation. And total change. Now, can you be unconditionally loving in whatever you do, whoever you are, wherever you're going? Can you be unconditionally loving? Can you be unconditionally loving with everybody in your life, your dogs and your cats and your children, you know, and your wife? That too, you know. But hey, she's got the message already. That's why she's got you. She's unconditionally loving. No matter what things you may have done in the past, no matter what judgments you may have laid to any of your people, she didn't even see it. She just saw you as a master, as a beautiful being, and she still does. That's the only way she knows about you. I'm sorry. That's maybe not what you plan to have her do, but anyhow, that's what she does. And you're doing that too. And you're doing that too, you know? Because you don't own each other. You like yourself, and you think that, hey, I love everybody in my world. People say to me, Herb, I want to be your friend. I said, don't. I said, because I don't have time for friends. I love everybody unconditionally at the moment I'm doing it, and then done. And I've been asked to get married about a dozen times by some very beautiful women, very rich and very fantastic women in every way you could ever want, you know. And I say, hey, I wouldn't make a good husband because I have a different love myself. I have a love for my work. I have a love for what I'm doing. I don't have time to come home in the evening and spend time with a person, you know. Myself, yes, you know. But for somebody else, no, no, no. I mean, there's no other person on the face of this earth good enough for me to spend my time with. If you want to spend your time with me, that's great. But for me to spend my time with you, you know, and there's nobody on earth for you, any of you, to spend your time with other than yourself, because you're number one. And start believing it and start acting like it. And when you start acting like it, then do you know what happens? Everybody loves you. Because you don't need something from anybody. You don't want something from somebody. You're totally satisfied in yourself. You're totally fulfilled in yourself. Then you can start to love your neighbor like yourself. Because you have learned to love yourself. Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul. Herb, that sounds so terrible. You know, that's not the way we've been taught, you know, in our church backgrounds and stuff like that, in Sunday school and stuff like that. We were never taught to be so, I don't even want to say what the words are, but we were never taught to be so selfish like that. You know, no, 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 no. Hey, but it's true. It's true. Now, I know what your answer is, but have you ever seen a more handsome, dignified, successful, positive man in your life than this guy? He said, yes, me. And that's right. That's right. And because you are that way, you can see him that way. And because he is that way, he sees all of you that way. When you came to enter the church today, what did he say to all of you? He says, I love you. You've been the bulwark of this church. You've been pillars of this church. You've been wonderful in this church. This church doesn't mean anything to me. It only means something to me to see you be the wonderful beings that you are. Finding an outlet for your love, finding an outlet for your sharing here in this church. You're fantastic. I love you. You know, and he hugs you and snuggles you in such a way that you say, my goodness sakes, I haven't been loved like this for a long time. And it's true. Unconditionally. He doesn't want anything from you. Because he sees you already fulfilled. You see? He sees you already magnificent, right? Right?
Yes.
Yep. And you. Did you ever know that your husband saw you as the most wonderful girl in the world? Oh, yes. Because that's the way you think you are. Because you know you're the most wonderful girl in the world. How could he think anything other than about you, right? And you for him, you know. Mr. Cherry Picker, huh? Mm-hmm. Beautiful. You see, this is what life is all about. And this is what you're all about. Now, did any of you have any questions or any thoughts that you wanted to share? Did you get the idea that we are answering that question wherever it went to? And the question was, how do you deal with unbelievers, especially in your family? Did we answer that pretty good? There are no unbelievers in your family. Because if you see an unbeliever in your family, you don't believe in yourself. Because everybody in your family is a pure reflection of who you are. You know, my mother always had a smile on her face. Five kids. She always had a smile on her face. And she would go down to the Unity Church where she was a minister, and she would do things there, part-time minister. And the full-time minister handled most of it, and she did everything else. And then she went up in the North Woods and started her own little church there, the log cabin that Pop built for her. And she just had a great old time. And everybody would say, you know, I know Ella must be having problems now and then, but I cannot tell it because she's always got a smile on her face. She's always got that beatific, angelic smile on her face that makes you think that all the world is okay and all the world is beautiful, you see? Now, when you can always smile through You're not crying on the inside. Don't give yourself credit for that. That's feeling self-pity. And we don't need to ever feel self-pity. We don't ever need to cry on the inside. All we do is to love, 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 and love some more. Because that's our nature, that's our being, that's who we are. And life is wonderful. Now, I don't feel sorry for anybody in the world. Nobody in the world. Do you know why I don't feel sorry for anybody in the world? Because they haven't got any problems. They don't have any problems. I feel happy for everybody in the world because you have the most beautiful marriage in heaven. And you have the most beautiful marriage in heaven. And you have the most beautiful practice that ever existed, filled with people who are honest, with integrity, and with perspicacity and all that other good stuff, you know? And that's who you are. And you... What's that?
What was that word? That was a
perspicacity.
Cool word. Perspicacity.
You like that? Huh?
I do. What is it?
You know what it means? Perspicacity? Oh. Perspicacity means unlimited, unbounded integrity and respect and stuff like that. You know. Yeah, and if it doesn't mean that, I made it up right now. So, but no, I didn't make it up.
It's a real word. Okay.
Yeah, it may be spelled differently than you think, but it's spelled pretty closely. Perspicacity. Okay, now, and what about you two? You cannot have a problem because I don't see you with any. I see you with perfect eyes, perfect hearing. I see you with a perfect body. I see you as a perfect being, surrounding yourself with your pure white light of love. And everybody in your world is reflecting back to you your pure white light of love. And so you look at them, and you cannot see them having a problem because it's just totally out of sync for that to be so in your life, you know? You know? No, wonderful. And you? Yeah. You're our pillar. And what do you do? Why is it so? As we said when you first came in, the only reason you're active in many areas of your life is because it satisfies you and it makes you happy. It makes you feel good inside to share the love in the way that you do it, right? I mean, that's the only reason you're alive. If you're not happy being you, you should be dead, you know? And you're happy being you, and you're going to be happy being you for the next umpty-dumpty trillion years, you know, because that's all you are. And remember that. Anytime anybody comes up to you and says, "I got a problem," you say, "What solution are we going to put into it?" We have the healing ministry where you can call dial free or toll free and get a practitioner at the University of Healing in the Healing Ministry, Worldwide Healing Ministry. And I give a talk on the telephone, on the free dialing service, dial a word, and dial healing words. And when I'm talking to the people, I'm saying things much like this here. And then I say, now you may call a practitioner, because everyone who answers the phone at the university is a practitioner. And when you call the practitioner, say, "I am whole and perfect. Affirm it with me." Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy, the practitioner says, "You got a winner there. Yes, sir, reser. I am independently wealthy." Whoa, I think that's marvelous. I think that's wonderful. Send us some. No, never. I think that's marvelous. I joy in your abundance, you know. "I am surrounded by beautiful people." You may be in the middle of a riot, you know. "I'm surrounded by beautiful people. I'm surrounded by beautiful people. I'm surrounded by beautiful people." You keep your mind and your consciousness pure and perfect on that. And you might be on the phone talking at that moment, and in the background is the riot noise. I've had that happen. And I said, "You just put your chest out, shoulders back, chin up, and say, 'Hey, y'all, you're beautiful. I love you.'" And they'll say, "What is this not doing in here, you know?" No, they won't say that. They'll say, "Huh? You're wonderful. You're fantastic. You're glorious." You know, they cannot fight. They cannot be angry.
when the good is called forth from them. When you walk on fire, calling it cool wet moss, you are calling forth the good. When you walk on fire, calling it hot and burning, then you're calling forth the principle of fire to be active on your feet. That's all. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. But, when you walk on fire and you're walking on cool wet moss, why is it 10 minutes later you take a hot pan off the stove and burn your hand? You should say, this pan is cool wet moss, and pick it up. Really, try it, if you are of mind. And I don't believe, like many people say, we should test God. Go in among the snakes and the vermin, you know, and they won't bite us, you know. Hey, Daniel in the lion's den did not want to be there. He was put there by the other advisors to the king, who wanted to get rid of him. They said, he violated your rules, and he prayed when he shouldn't have been praying, the self-dual God he shouldn't have been praying to. And Daniel couldn't say anything, because he always prayed to his God. And they put him in the lion's den. And when they put him in the lion's den, Daniel was there. And the king came the next morning and said, Daniel, forgive me. Are you still there? Can you forgive me? And Daniel was sitting there with the lions resting in his lap. And Daniel said, with the Lord, nothing can come nigh unto me. You see, with truth, nothing can ever touch us. If we are put into a situation that is a little beyond our... We caused it. I mean, Daniel should have just not been praying to his God, you know, because that was what he agreed not to do. And you shouldn't do such a silly thing as agree not to do something you can't help doing. So the king loved him like a son and was glad that he lived. And they took care of the other advisors who were eager and angry at Daniel because he was getting all the credit and they were not accomplishing anything because they weren't listening to Daniel's God, the one eternal God. This is how you are. This is how you are. You're listening to the one eternal God right here. Now, I'm going to ask you this question. Was Daniel for one moment frightened of the lions? Nope, he couldn't have been. He walked in there and he says, hi guys, I see we're all in this together. He says, come on over. I want to powwow with you. I want to palaver with you. And so the lions all came over and said, what in the world is this? We never had one like this before, you know. And can we taste you and see whether we like you or not, you know? And Daniel said, he didn't even hear that. He didn't even hear that remark. He just says, you guys are beautiful. I have never seen a bunch of lions as beautiful as you guys are. You are fantastic. You are glorious. You are wonderful. And the lions naturally came over and snuggled him. And they said, lean your head on my back, you know. Put your head in my mouth, you know. And they wouldn't have touched him. But you see, he was free from any fear. Fear, 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 fear. He was free from any fear. And so the fear did not own him, control him, or destroy him. Otherwise, fear destroys us. You get me going here, and I keep coming up with a new series of programs, and they're great. They're wonderful. Yes, Dad? You're smiling. You're happy. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, 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 yes. But you see, this is how these things work. This is how the principle works. This is how all of these things come about in our life. We are the master, and we take full charge of everything we do, and let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. O Lord, my strength and my Savior, as the saying goes. But let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight. In my sight. Now, I know that's a little raw, it gets you. But get over it. Start saying, I'm God. Start saying, I like me. Start saying, I am wonderful. Start saying, I am the essence of all that is. I am the fulfillment of all that is. You say, well, how can I be an absolutely spiritual being in my human body? Well, get out of your human body. I don't mean die. Stop thinking in your human body and start thinking in your divine body. I like me, and all is in divine order. I like me, and all is in divine order. I like me, and all is in divine order. And that has nothing to do with human beings. Nothing to do with human order. All is in divine order. Now, you watch. You say you want to lose a pound or two. Just say, I like me, and all is in divine order. And don't say how it's to be in divine order. Just say, I like me, and all is in divine order, and you'll have it. You'll have it. Every time I start dumping some weight, I feel like an angel. I get up in the morning, and I walk a three-mile path around the mountains. And my doctor says, that's not very far. I said, well, you want to come walk the path with me? You know, come on up and down. It's a great path. And then my dog goes with me. And it's a wonderful path. And I feel great. And I say, I like me, all is in divine order. I like me, all is in divine order. And the more excess weight that is not necessary for me, as I just said, I dropped 25 pounds. The more weight, I feel fantastic. I feel glorious. And I feel so wonderful not pumping on a bunch of food that I don't need. And everyone says, well, I go back to eating again. Yeah, ha, ha, ha. Yeah. But I feel so great. I feel so great when all is in divine order. And then as I go the second trip around, and then I come back, and then I do some work on my computer, and then I go to breakfast with a group. And then after that, I make a third trip around. 4 hours in the day, that's 12 miles. You know, not always. Sometimes I don't even get any in. But usually I get one trip or two, and I try to go for four. But you see, I feel so good. I feel so healthy. I feel so vital. I feel so alive. And it is just great. And I was walking along the path the other day, and I was climbing up between some rocks here, you know, going up quite a steep incline. And here was this great, big, beautiful, rusty diamond-backed, rusty-colored rattlesnake, a big old guy. And I said, well, my goodness, what are you doing here? And he was just sitting there and trying to reposition himself a little bit. And so I walked past. And, you know, no problem. And then Rex comes along. My pup, Rex, you know, just a little over a year at the time. And Rex says, well, hi, how are you? You know, we should get to know each other. You look like something I should carry around, you know. I said, Rex, come with me. And Rex didn't come with me. So I said, Rex, I surround you with my pure white light of love, and I walked away. And a couple minutes later, he was chasing after me. But you see, I wasn't worried about him. I was worried about the rattlesnake. No, I wasn't worried about him or the snake. All I wanted to do was to have him with me as I'm walking, you know. And if he doesn't immediately come away like I ask him to, well, it just needs a little more training, you know. But that's good, too. And you see, that's the part of it. Even with a dog, if you don't give him enough training, then he won't respond to things as he should. And Rex is living for my pleasure. He is my friend, not friend, he is my pet. And he is my joy. And he lies on my feet, and he is heavy. He lies on my feet when he's sitting in the chair. And then I'm at the meal table, and he'll stick his head right across my chest here, and you know, I'm trying to eat, and he'll lift up his head sometimes and take my hand out of my plate. But he never put his face over the plate, though. So. And they say, well, you shouldn't let him do that either. And why not? My dog. We're happy. If he gets bothersome, if he does it to somebody else, we'll see you. If he does it, do we have a time schedule?
No, I do.
Anytime now.
Okay.
Love you. Thank you very much.
Love you. So, that's the way it goes. He's my pet, and I have him for my joy. And when he ceases to be a joy to me, I just stop thinking about him and he disappears. That's what happens. We had a number of pets up at the ranch, and the different people were caring about them. And I said, now, you train them. Train them to come when you want them. Do this and that. And they didn't do that. They didn't take the 15 minutes a day that it takes to train them. And it only takes a month, maybe, to do that. And 15 minutes a day. And, you know, and then they're done. But they didn't do that. And so each one of the three different dogs went out for a walk, and a coyote had breakfast, lunch, or dinner, whatever time of the day it was. And it's foolish. I said, hey, you did that. You didn't want the animal anymore because you didn't feel that the training of the animal was worth that much to you to take the time to do it. Now, do you feel that the training of your body is worth the time to do it? You know, to say, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. See, when we train our bodies, your body is your tool. It's your temple. Your body is not you. Your body is just a reflection of what you think it should be for you. If you think your body should be without any illnesses, without any aches or pains, without any this, that, or other, not even hungry, you know, you eat just because it's pleasant to eat with other people, it wouldn't be nice. And not have any need for anything like that because you are so fulfilled. You see, then your body is your tool. Totally your tool. And if you want your tool to levitate, it will levitate. If you want it to teleport, it'll teleport. If you want it to do all these silly things, it'll do it. And they are silly things only because we anchor ourselves with our bodies. We think our bodies are necessary to live on this planet Earth. How many of you have ever done out-of-body journeys? And doing out-of-body journeys, you do them, and you don't need your body. Robert Monroe, as he was writing about it, he was saying, I got cold when I was in outer space. How can you get cold when you left your body behind, you know? Because you're thinking mentally. And you see, when you're traveling mentally, you've got to put aside all your physical aspects of who you are and think in the spiritual aspects of who you are. You are just a thought, an idea. And if you want, you have your physical type of body, and so you're swimming through the sky and stuff like that. But no, you just think your thought, and zip, you're here, zip, you're there. You read Jonathan Livingston Seagull? Okay, in Jonathan Livingston Seagull, Chang was up on in the heavenly state with him there, and one minute he was here on the beach, and next minute he was way down there. And Jonathan says, how did you do that? And Chang says, love, just practice love. Just practice, practice. And so he practiced, who knows how long. And all of a sudden, Chang was there watching him all the time. All of a sudden, he was on another planet which had several moons and several whatevers, and he missed his direction a little bit, but he got the point. Now, it didn't have to take him that long. It took Richard Bach that long, because Richard was writing a story that had to have volume to it, and it had to have events to it, you know. But actually, when Chang says, think it, and you got it. Huh, man, boy. Thinking is my thing, Richard, Jonathan would say. And doop, doop, there he was. Doop, doop, there he was. Because Jonathan was no stupid seagull, you know, as we are not. So, you see? Okay, do you have any questions? Any thoughts? As I'm sure that all of you are about ready to be unseated and prepare yourself for a lovely dinner that you don't need. But that's okay. Hey, it's a good time like this fellow with his family, 12 children, you know, right? Okay, well, we will have a wonderful service tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to have our special title. What's our special title tomorrow? Magic Kingdom? Magic Kingdom. And so we're going to do the Magic Kingdom tomorrow. And I always check with my notebook here to make sure I'm doing the right thing. But the Magic Kingdom is a lot of fun. And turn this thing on here. Come on. There she is. There she is. And I'll just read it to you so that you see what we're talking about tomorrow. Because I know that you're fantastically interested in it. I should have left that on then. Okay. Okay, here we are. Education's Magic Kingdom. I am locked into a body brain which is programmed for survival. One mind is in me and in all, and I can live and use it for whatever I desire. I can take one or two routes to being outstanding. I can study what the body is and how the body and how the brain works, functions. And second, I can recognize there is one universal intelligence, and it is my source of every experience and every level of consciousness that I could ever want. So, that is what we will be talking about tomorrow. And we will just have a wonderful time. Isn't life great?
If any of you want to visit with her privately, he's staying at our house, and either come by or call.